Good morning. Told Lex to say that we were having sound issues with Facebook and the iPad and to go ahead and announce that. And he said, well, how would anybody know that's watching at home? I said, I'm glad one of us is thinking. But we are having some sound issues. Our plan is not that you all will care, but we're going to try to upload that. So if you talk to somebody and they say they didn't see it, we're going to do our best to get this up immediately following. I do want to thank you all for being here and participating in worship this morning. If you're a guest, we welcome you. Please allow us a chance to meet you and to say hello. We're thankful that you are here. We're going to continue our series talking about family, talking about the home, talking about being followers of Jesus and trying to make our homes being little embassies of God's kingdom within our community and within our world. If we as individual Christians are following Jesus and being citizens of God's kingdom, and then we are influencing and leading our families, no matter how many people are in your family, if we are leading and influencing them in ways of Jesus, then our home should be little embassies of the kingdom of heaven right here in our community and the world where we are being salt and light. Well, we've been working through the Sermon on the Mount between Mother's Day and Father's Day, and thank goodness Father's Day is coming up. I think if I put a box and check these boxes of all these principles that I live up to, I might end up with a lot of empty boxes versus checks. These are tough lessons, like I said, for at least for me. Well, we're taking the things that Jesus says and applying them to our family, to our home, to say, what would it look like if I lived out these principles? What would it look like if I lived out these things in the context of my marriage, of my parenting, of the relationship with my family? What if you lived out these kingdom ethics within the context of your home? What if we were praying, not only, Father, may your will be done in heaven as it is on earth, but may your will be done in my home as it is in heaven? So let's start this morning maybe with a little game of sorts. You decide which of these statements is untrue. Number one, peanuts are nuts. Number two, the American buffalo is a buffalo. Number three, the koala bear is a bear. Number four, the mountain goat is a goat. And number five, the starfish is a fish. Now, I know all of these seem obvious and self-explanatory, but I want you to pick the number you believe is untrue. And hopefully you have your number. And no matter what number you've picked, of course, you're right. All of these are untrue. Peanuts are legumes. There are such things as buffaloes, such as the Cape buffalo or the water buffalo, but the American buffalo is actually a bison. The koala bear is a marsupial. The mountain goat is actually called a goat antelope, and the starfish is not a fish at all. So anyway, I say all that to say maybe it's kind of fun to work through those things, and none of those things really matter, but all of those statements are untrue. But I think it illustrates something that I want to talk about this morning, that sometimes it's hard to know who or what to believe. There are so many things in our world that are half-truths, that there are so many things in this world that are deceits and deceptions, so many agendas, so many lies, so many liars. There is so much deceit and trickery in the world. There is so much twisting of the information in this world. So many people trying to lead people in one direction or the other, saying things that are flat out not true or are a twisting of the truth. And that leaves all of us, every single one of us, saying it's hard to know what to believe. I don't know what to believe anymore. And in the last year, for sure, that has been illustrated over and over and over again. I don't know what to believe. You see one news story or you see it on your news feed and it seems to say one thing. And then the next moment later, you see something that says the exact opposite. And you say, I don't know what to believe. I don't know who is telling the truth. I don't even know what the truth looks like. I don't know where to look for the truth because there are so many lies and liars and deception and misinformation. Sometimes it's hard to know what to believe. So here's what we do. If we hear something that does not support what we already believe, we say, that's probably not true. If somebody tells us something or shows us something that doesn't support what we already believe, we say, nah, I don't believe that. We have turned in to a whole lot of skeptics. Because, again, we don't know who or what to believe. We don't know who is telling us the truth. We don't know who's lying and what's the truth. And so something comes along and somebody shows us something. It could be a picture or watch a video or hear an audio, and we say, I don't believe that, just because we don't know what to believe and that doesn't support what we already think. And so we reject it and we say, I don't believe that. But unfortunately, another thing we tend to do is when we do see or we do hear something that does support what we already believe, we pass that along like it's a hot potato to other people. And we say, yeah, did you hear about so-and-so? Do you know what they did? Did you see this report about this one thing? And if it supports what we already believe, we pass it along. Even though sometimes that's not true either. And then we end up perpetuating this cycle of deceit. In fact, we might say something like this: the world is caught in a cycle of deception and distrust. And because we know there is so much deception and so much lying and misinformation, and we know that there are people with agendas that are trying to lead us in certain directions, that they twist the facts to fit their agenda, and we say, I don't believe that. And so we distrust, and it's really, really, really hard to convince us to believe something that we don't already believe. It's hard to convince us that someone is telling us the truth in the midst of that cycle of deception and distrust, and so we end up perpetuating that cycle so many times. And I wish I could stand up here and say that I'm not guilty of participating in that cycle of deception and distrust, but I have, and likely so have you. I can't count for sure in this last year friends and family that has shared something that somebody said, and it took about 60 seconds to figure out that's not really true. They didn't really say that, or it was taken out of context, or that really wasn't what the person said, and the person, whether they meant to or not, is perpetuating this cycle of deception and distrust. And now the next person they say something to, whatever it might be, they're not going to believe them. Why? Because the last time you told me something, that wasn't true. And every time more deception is perpetuated, there is more and more distrust. Well, when I first got started preaching, I got a lot of apologetic material about Christianity. Like, here's why you should believe in God, because of this or that. And all of this evidence was given to say, this is why you should believe in God. And I thought I needed to share that information to people to say, here's the reasons why. But sometimes that information that was being passed off as God's existence, that wasn't even true. And that doesn't mean God doesn't exist. God very much exists. But people, for one reason or another, people were perpetuating evidence that was faulty to support the view that they already believed in, but as evidence. And it's passed off as true. And people would examine it and say, if this is your evidence, I don't believe you anymore. Even Christians trying to support their view of the very real existence of God can sometimes fall victim to perpetuating this cycle of deception and distrust. We have to work to break that cycle. Those of us who are committed to following Jesus, those of us who are praying, may your will be done on earth and in my home as it is in heaven, we have to be committed to breaking this cycle of deception and distrust. Our homes have to be places of truth and trust. What if our homes were places like that, where we don't tolerate deception, not from people we like and not from people we don't like? We don't tolerate lies from people we agree with, and we don't tolerate lies from people we disagree with. That we will not spread misinformation, even if it supports my views. That I will scrutinize information and I will only speak and only spread what is true in the place where that information might, or I won't, when the information only supports my view. If it's untrue, if it's twisted, if it's taken out of context, I'm not going to spread it. Finally, we will keep our word. If we say what we are going to do, something that it's going to happen, you can take that to the bank. If we say this is something true, then people should be able to trust us. And by doing these things, we break that cycle of deception and distrust, and we begin building cycles of trust and truth. This is what it looks like to be little embassies of God's kingdom in our communities. So let's look at the text. Matthew chapter 5, beginning in verse 33, Jesus speaking. He says, "Again, you have heard that it was said to those of old, 'You shall not swear falsely, but shall perform to the Lord what you have sworn.'" And of course, when Jesus says you shall not swear falsely, sometimes we think about swearing as saying bad words, but that's not what he's talking about here. He's talking about sworn testimony. In the days of Jesus, when you swore a testimony, when you would say, "I swear this is true," you would often do it with a curse, where you would say, "May the Lord strike me dead if this isn't true." Or "May the Lord deal with me ever so severely if this isn't true. May the Lord take vengeance on me if this isn't true." So when Jesus is talking about swearing, he's talking about a sworn testimony. And oftentimes that sworn testimony was accompanied by a curse. Take, for instance, in Matthew chapter 26, when Peter is asked, "Aren't you one of Jesus' disciples?" When Jesus is on trial and they come up to him and they say, "You have a Galilean accent. You had to be with him." And Peter says, "No, that wasn't me. I don't know that person." And he denied it, and it says that he denied it with an oath. And then it says that he began to invoke a curse on himself and to swear. When Jesus talks about swearing falsely, he's talking about swearing an oath, and oftentimes, like Peter does, it's something like the curse upon himself. If that's not true, oftentimes the Lord's name would be used in the swearing of oaths. And someone might say, "May the Lord deal with me," or "May the Lord strike me dead." Well, if they believed when you invoked the Lord's name, then it carried with it a real binding quality. Because if I say, "May the Lord strike me dead if this isn't true," and it turns out not to be true, and I have sworn to something that wasn't true, and I have invoked the Lord's name, then you would expect the Lord to strike me dead. Just wait. He lied and he used the Lord's name about it, and he said the Lord was going to strike him down if this wasn't true. Then what happens if the Lord doesn't strike me down when it's not true? Then God's credibility, God's reputation has been stained. And so the Jewish people of that day took that oath very, very seriously. If you invoked the Lord's name, it was the swearing of your oaths, then it was super binding. It was even more binding than just saying it. It was even more binding than swearing by something else, which of course led them to trying to figure out a way to swear an oath to be taken seriously, because sometimes people don't believe you. They distrust you like they did with Peter. And so we ratchet it up because of all that mistrust. So we ratchet up our speech and we say, "No, I swear this is true. May the Lord strike me dead if this isn't true." They wanted to be very careful. We don't want to invoke the Lord's name here. We have to be very careful that we don't involve the Lord's credibility here, because if it turns out not to be true, we don't want that to be binding on us. So let's find something different to swear by so that people will still believe us, but it's not quite as binding as swearing by the Lord. So they would find other things to swear by, big things, important things, but not as important as God. And so they would swear. And so Jesus tells them, don't take an oath at all, either by heaven, for it is the throne of God, or by the earth, for it is the footstool, or for it is his footstool, or by Jerusalem, for it is the city of the great king, and do not take an oath by your head, for you cannot make one hair white or black. And just a couple of things here. Do you see how this swearing of oaths, and we still do it today. I swear this is true. I swear on my mother's grave. Why do we do that? Because we want people to believe us. And why don't they believe us? Because there are liars in the world. And there is this cycle of distrust and deception. And so people disbelieve. And again, because there are so many liars and so much misinformation, and so many people don't know what to believe, that we feel like we have to ratchet up our speaking so that people will listen to us above all the other noise. They will believe us, and they will listen to us in spite of all the lies in the world. But a lot of times, we end up perpetuating this cycle of distrust and deception, because in the end, sometimes we end up saying things that aren't true. And then we want to get out of it, but we swore. And so we find silly things, like kids will say, well, I crossed my fingers when I said that, so it doesn't really count. And so we perpetuate this cycle. And the Jews of Jesus' day had found ways to swear so that people would believe them. They found ways to take oaths that weren't quite as binding as they would had they sworn by the Lord. So they would swear by heaven or by earth or by Jerusalem or by their own head. But do you notice what Jesus says? He says, who dwells in heaven? Who owns the earth? Whose city is Jerusalem? Who makes your hair the color that it is? Is it you? Does Jerusalem belong to you or to the great king? Is heaven where you dwell or is it where God dwells? It's him. So Jesus says, don't you see? Even when you swear by these other things, you're still invoking the credibility of God. When you lend your name to something, when you lend your word to something, when you lend your credibility to something, you lend God's as well. If you belong to God, if God's people lend their name, their word, their credibility to something, then they lend God's name and credibility as well. Jesus says, even when you swear by your head belongs to God. Even when you swear by Jerusalem, Jerusalem belongs to the great king. Even when you swear by the earth is still God's footstool. And when you swear by heaven, the heavens belong to God. So you're invoking the credibility of God no matter how you swear. And Jesus says, stop doing it. Stop taking these sorts of oaths, because all you're doing is perpetuating the cycle of deception and distrust. All you are doing is indicating that your word really can't be trusted unless you ratchet it up with an oath. All you're doing is saying that if I just said yes or I just said no, you couldn't really believe me. But now you better believe me because I swore on my mother's grave, so it must be true. Or I swore by Jerusalem, so it must be true. Or I swore by my head, as if you could remove my head if something I said wasn't true. And Jesus says, all you are doing is perpetuating this cycle of distrust and deception. And then in verse 37, he says, let what you say be simply yes or no. Anything more than this comes from evil. That this sort of voluntary swearing an oath to things, just ratcheting up our speech so that people will believe you, so that people will listen to you, so that people will believe you are telling the truth, it comes from evil, Jesus says. Well, why does it come from evil? Because this is at the very heart of evil. This is why we live in a world where we don't know what to believe. We don't know whether to believe this news or that news or this side or that side, this friend or that friend. And so we end up believing what we already think, and nobody can convince us otherwise. And we end up perpetuating this cycle of lies and deception, and we continue to play into that game. And Jesus says all of this swearing and oath-taking is just continuing this evil of distrust and deception. And isn't that exactly what we are still doing today? We might not say the words, I swear this is true, but that's exactly what we tend to do. Listen to me. I'm telling the truth. The things that I'm saying are true. Jesus says, stop and simply let your yes be yes and your no be no. Not going to play those games anymore. I'm not going to continue that cycle. I'm not going to keep going round and round. If we say it, it's true. If we say it's not true, it's not true. If we say I'm going to do it, then we go and do it. If we say that this person did such and such and I saw them do it, then you should be able to take it to the bank, because these people, God's people, they don't spread things that aren't true. They don't perpetuate lies and misinformation. We only speak the truth. What if we decided that our homes will be places of trust and truth? We only speak truth here. Even if misinformation supports our views, if it's misinformation, we don't spread it. We are not going to continue playing that game. This is going to be a home where we start a cycle of truth and trust. This is going to be a place where your yes is yes and you can believe it. Where we foster an environment of trust, where people don't feel like they have to swear to us for us to believe them, and we don't feel like we have to ratchet up our speech a notch for them to believe us. But here's the thing. Like Peter, we've all blown it. Like Peter, we've all participated in deception and distrust. Like Peter, we have all spread things that weren't true. Maybe we spread them and we knew they already weren't true. Maybe we swore to them and we knew this probably isn't true. Or maybe we just spread it and later we found out it wasn't true. Either way, we have participated in this cycle and we have participated in creating an atmosphere in this world where nobody knows what to believe anymore. Nobody knows who or what to trust, and so we believe only the things we already believe, and we keep spreading more lies. Like Peter, we've all participated in that. Like Peter, we've all spread things that weren't true, and when Peter realizes what he has done, of course he goes out and he weeps bitterly. But do you know what Peter finds in Jesus? In Jesus, he finds mercy and grace and forgiveness and mission. He finds in Jesus mercy and grace and forgiveness and mission. Jesus doesn't just forgive him. He says, now go and feed my sheep. Go tell the world about me. Go make disciples of every nation. Go and tell every creature under heaven that I am king. Go and make disciples of every nation, baptizing them in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Go on mission. That's what we can find in Jesus. The same thing is mercy and grace and forgiveness and mission. Jesus knows that we have participated in the disinformation, with the deception, with the distrust. Jesus knows that we have spread information just because it supported what we already thought. Jesus knows that we have said things and spread things that turned out to be untrue, whether we knew it at the time or not, and he is willing to forgive. In Jesus, we can find forgiveness, but we can also find mission to go into the world and tell the world about Jesus, but to also live out this cycle, this new and better cycle of trust and truth, where we become beacons of truth in our communities. When people know, I'm pretty sure that that family feels this way about something, but they never spread information, even when it supports their views. When this family says something, says they are going to do something, they absolutely do it. Their word is gold. And if they say something, that somebody has said something or did something, these people speak the truth. What if every follower of Jesus was known for that? What if every household that bore the name of Christ could be known as a place of truth and trust? Where we don't continue the cycle of deception and distrust, but we establish in Jesus this new cycle of truth and trust. That's what we want to try to do this week. To find forgiveness for not only believing the lies and being fooled, but for playing into the lies and spreading the lies and commit to being a people who are all about truth and trust. Let's work to be that kind of people, the kind of people who don't always agree with each other's opinions. You don't have to agree with everybody in this room on opinions. Your view isn't going to be the same as everyone else's, but you never have to spread misinformation in order to support your view. If your view is true and you stand upon it and that's your perspective and that's your conclusion, you don't have to spread lies or misinformation in order for that to be your view. In fact, as followers of Jesus, we have to be committed to being the opposite of that, where we don't tolerate lies because we are a people of truth and trust. In Jesus, we find forgiveness to start over and the road to walk on to take the next step. And that's our mission this year. That's the theme of this year, take the next step by faith. Think together with your family. What can we do as a family to be a place of truth and trust, to be a beacon of truth in our community? Here in just a moment, Will has selected a song, and we're going to allow you the opportunity to come and put Christ on in baptism, to be buried, to be brought forth, and transformed, to begin your new life as for Christ as a new creature. You might already be that, but find yourself struggling, need support in some way. And again, this song and time will be an opportunity for you to do that. But we also want you to know that there is no time frame on coming to Christ. We offer this time because it's convenient, but any time is available. We want to help, no matter the time or the hour. If that time is now, we urge you to come as together we stand and we sing.